Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast. Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
All right, hour number three, we're rolling along here. John Dickinson and Larry Kruger in for Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game. We'll get back into some 49er conversation coming up here, but let's get back into the Warriors with our Warriors insider, and it's Anthony Slater joining us here. Slater, what's going on, my man? Good to be with you.
It is. How's everybody?
Yeah, we're doing well, getting through the holiday and getting on in deeper into this 8-game homestand that continues with the Warriors and the Hornets. And just right off the top, we started talking about, you know, this is always one of those nights where things get revisited as far as LaMelo Ball's coming in. You've got James Wiseman playing a little better these last couple of games, especially against Memphis. But how do you view the 2020 draft right now as far as it shook out with the Warriors taking Wiseman, haven't gotten a lot from him, LaMelo with Charlotte? I mean, is it too strong to say the Warriors made a mistake? And what's your sense for how the Warriors view it at this point?
I mean, no, it's not. I mean, they got 8 minutes from Wiseman the other day, and it felt like a very positive step forward, right? And we're talking about third year of the second overall pick. So, you know, you can look at LaMelo, who was among the three they were really contemplating up top. Anthony Edwards being the other one, obviously went number one overall. You could, you know, really second guess, be like, you know, Tyrese Halliburton, trade down and get him. I mean, obviously that would have been the home run option. But, you know, how do the Warriors view it at this point? It was like relatively a consensus pick, and that's the thing. It doesn't seem like it's, you know, a mistake that is fracturing, you know, different factions within the Warriors. I think at this point they're just trying to maximize what James Wiseman is in the current moment. And as we, you know, take the blow-by-blow, play-by-play of James Wiseman's career, again, it is not great for where he's at right now, but there have been minor positive steps, I think, in the last month, you know, sending him down to the G League and then at least seeing some small things lately that make you believe, hey, maybe he can help a little bit in the rotation. And I think we're going to see it again tonight because JaMychal Green remains protocol.
Anthony, when are we going to see Wiggins?
Yeah, that's a great question. I could see middle of his homestand, but I also was being told Christmas. That was the target date, and he is still out. Obviously, he missed that game. I can see why you don't want to debut him on a back-to-back. You don't want to double-dip him right here. They want to see him get some live scrimmage action, which he has not yet. So maybe the Portland game, the 30th, you know, right after that, they have two off days, which will include a big practice. So you might be talking January 2nd on Wiggins. They're still kind of trying to figure that out, but they need him soon.
Yeah, no question. And yeah, that's kind of the follow up is, you know, when with such a compacted schedule do you get live work, and what would that live work consist of? Is that 5-on-5 scrimmaging? Is that 3-on-3 with you know, some of the staff? I mean, how does that look for the Warriors when they want to get it in?
You know, I've heard he's done a little 3-on-3. You know, I don't know how, you know, active that was. I think what they really want to see is the 5-on-5, you know, where you play like 5 straight minutes like you would, you know, during a segment. Especially, you know, Wiggins is a 38-minute per night, like every night type player. So they want to get him out there 5-on-5 long segments before they green light him to play. How do you do that during a schedule like this? It's tougher, but, you know, you can bring a G League team up. I mean, they do it all the time. Obviously, some coaches can play. The younger guys, can always kind of join a scrimmage. But again, I am starting to, you know, look at that 2-day break they're going to have between. It's a Portland game. I don't even know who. Maybe you're looking at
Atlanta. Atlanta, yeah. On Monday.
Yeah, maybe you get like a Sunday really good scrimmage, or maybe a Saturday. You know, during that weekend. For that's kind of the area I seem to be targeting.
Who, give me a team in the West that you actually think could beat the Warriors in a 7-game playoff series?
A fully healthy, realized Clippers team. If Kawhi Leonard looks like Kawhi Leonard, but like, should I believe that is ever going to happen again? I don't know. You know, Memphis gave them a difficult series last year, and I know this is like probably not a popular time to be saying I can see Memphis, you know, giving them hell in a 7-game series, but I can still see that. I don't see Denver. I just, like, you know, if the Warriors are healthy with Curry, I just think Denver can't guard them. Don't see Phoenix. I mean, they've kind of proven themselves to be frauds in a lot of ways. I don't know. Where are you guys at?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, I think Memphis is among those, although, you know, the take on the Grizzlies for me changes a little bit, and maybe it shouldn't necessarily based on Sunday, but it just kind of said to me, Slater, that, you know, when the Warriors want to dial it up, and they clearly would want to dial it up against them maybe more than any other team, they can find a gear, and I don't want to say in the Grizzlies' heads a little bit, but it looked kind of like that on Sunday, and the Grizzlies have done a lot of talking, and with every loss, it almost it makes me wonder, you know, the Grizzlies might be able to beat everybody else, but if they had to play the Warriors may have a little something for them. I think we disagree a little bit on Denver. You know, I think if Denver could get Murray back to a point that he hasn't been able to quite hit yet with Jokic and all of that, I think they could be a team that gives them a run. But for me, it's not as much about, you know, can the Warriors beat any one team? To me, it's more the collective of, can they beat Memphis and Phoenix and Denver and then have enough left in the tank for Milwaukee or Boston or Brooklyn or whoever comes out of the East?
Well, by the way, probably going on the road for all those series.
Right.
Know, at least what they're current, you know, where they are in the standings right now. You know, with the Denver matchup, it's just, to me, it's going to be 55 high screens with Steph Curry and Jordan Poole for Nikola Jokic to guard game after game after game. And they've always liked that matchup. They loved getting them as the sixth last year, 3-6. You know, and again, like you said, there's no Jamal Murray, no Michael Porter really, you know, last year. So Denver profiles more formidably. Bruce Brown helps, KCP helps, but I don't view them as that much of a threat. I'm waiting for the Clippers to come together and have like a 10-game regular season stretch where Kawhi and Paul George both look like themselves, and then I would say that's the team, but I still haven't seen that.
I kind of like Dallas a little bit, just getting Christian Wood. You got a healthy Hardaway Jr. To me, they look pretty good. The one thing I'm not concerned about is I'm not concerned about what seed the Warriors are. To me, it's just about can they get, you know, healthy and find a rhythm, get to May, and, you know, have a solid rotation. If they can do all those things, whether it be the 2 seed, the 6 seed, the 7 seed, their health and their rhythm means so much more than their seed.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, like they need all of their top 6 to be available and healthy, which we saw in the playoffs last year. They were fortunate. That's what happened. But beyond those top 6 having to be there when it matters, they need to figure out 7, 8, 9 in the rotation. And, you know, they are 16 and 18 right now, but I think they're starting to get some decent answers. Dante DiVincenzo has been, like, really good the last month, and that's been huge.
No, and I think Dante DiVincenzo would be somebody that you almost, by the end of the year, I think maybe even now, the Warriors would consider a seventh, right, among that group. Yeah. You've got the 6, and then he's the 7th that you would trust in a playoff series or in a playoff run. One thing I wanted to ask you, and we're joined by Anthony Slater here, our 95.7 The Game Warriors insider, is just kind of along those lines, but taking a different spin to it, just the sense of urgency for this homestand. I know it was a little bit of a blow, had to be, not having Wiggins back when I think they did hope they could get him back on Christmas. Didn't quite. Out tonight. probably tomorrow as well. But, you know, the Warriors played with a sense of urgency against Memphis. Do you think they've got a sense that they really want to try to lock in here, even without Steph and Wiggins, and try to bring that level of intensity? Like, just gauge for us the level of urgency to not dip even farther below 500 by winning some of these games on this homestand, even shorthanded.
Yeah, I think it's there. We've seen it at home all year. I mean, it isn't like they've maybe had one or two dull games at home, but only have two home losses. That's mostly been with Steph Curry. I do expect them to, you know, just from a defense effort level to show up. Like, you know, tonight, Utah, I think the winnable game tomorrow, Portland, Atlanta. I mean, all these games, like, you cannot, without Steph Curry and without Wiggins, you can't just assume any wins. Like, they could be beaten in any of these next seven, but like, they're almost all winnable. You got Phoenix in there, that's going to be difficult, but I think they got to be like thinking 6-2, 5-3, and that sounds like, you think, you know, unrealistic considering what they have been without Steph Curry the last, you know, handful of years. They're basically always like 2-7 over 9 game stretches, but winnable home games, desperation time, Jordan Poole, I expect. You know, they just need what they got out of him the other day, what they got out of him in Toronto. They need that on a consistent basis. He needs to be hot from three. Klay Thompson needs to probably have one or two big games peppered in here. But I think it's available to them, and they're at home. They're getting practice time and all that. Draymond Green's, like, energized. I think he's coming with good force, and that usually spells competitiveness for them at least.
You know, the guy who's so impressive to me when I've seen him, and I've only seen glimpses, but Patrick Baldwin Jr., I mean, the ball comes off his hand, just, it's a thing of beauty, and he seems to know how to play. He's the son of a coach. I know he's a rookie, and they got a lot of young guys here, but what, any chance that Baldwin gives them something down the stretch and that he could work his way into the rotation? Because there's some high, and he's a beneath the rim kind of a player, but there's some high end ability there.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the shot in Brooklyn, right? He came on the court, he hit like 5 threes in about 10 minutes, and suddenly they had cut that lead from 40 to 19. But he seems to get banged up pretty easily. Obviously, they're just kind of getting his ankle right. It's been like 2 years of like really pretty deep ankle troubles that he's had that it sounds like they finally solved getting him in the building. But, you know, he goes down to the G League and it's back soreness and it's a thumb issue. And I just think that the grind of the NBA season and all that, like, to me, it just doesn't seem like they plan on him battering this year in the rotation. It's almost like this project that won't even really get off the ground in an NBA setting until next season, especially with, you know, Wiseman. They're trying to still fit Wiseman in. They can barely get him in. He's getting 8 minutes, even with Jermichael Green out. Jermichael Green will come back. Andre Iguodala is probably going to show up at some point. I think if they went trade market hunting and tried to get, you know, fringe rotation guys or a buyout market, it would probably be in the front court. So I just think he's too buried, and the plan is too much of like a next season with Baldwin and working with him behind the scenes on his body and his game.
Anthony, looking at the Memphis game, you could make the case it was, you know, the first game or one of a handful of games, you know, really in the last couple of years. And Wiseman obviously missed all of last year, but they got positive contributions from the lottery picks all on the same night, all helped them to win a game. Do you see that as the template moving forward here as far as giving them opportunities? I mean, they even played well all three on the floor together at the same time, which is something that, you know, hasn't happened a lot, but when it has, it's been disastrous for the Warriors. Just what do you see as far as some short-term sustainability while they're a little shorthanded on this homestand as far as trying to carve out more from Wiseman, like what they got against Memphis, and also seeing Kuminga and even Moody get those opportunities?
Yeah, you know, that was against like one of the deepest teams in the league the other night, too. That was what was so impressive about it. I think Kuminga is pretty solidified. You know, we talked about the answers. They're trying to get the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, you know, part of the rotation. I think he's there. There's some nights are better than others. He was a little sluggish in Toronto, and his knee was bothering me. He only plays 5 minutes. There'll be those nights within there. But I think most times, you know, tonight he'll probably play 20, 25 minutes. He's probably going to get, you know, some of the LaMelo Ball assignment tonight. Just what he can do defensively, they don't have elsewhere, and they really need. switchable, you know, can kind of take primary assignments. So I think he's set. Moody, you know, he's had a tough time leaping. You know, he's not going to leap DiVincenzo in the rotation. Ty Jerome, I mean, Steve Kerr loves having him, you know, an extra ball handler out there. So it's even been difficult for him to get ahead of Jerome. So I still think he's going to live somewhat on the fringes. And then as far as Wiseman goes, I mean, tonight feels crucial. Tomorrow even feels crucial if Jermichael Green's not back, because I think that is his path to a rotation spot and not maybe, you know, another trip to the G League, is stay ahead of Jermichael Green. Jermichael Green has left the door open. He has not been that impressive this season. And if James Wiseman can just play minutes like he did the other night defensively, I'm only looking at him on the defensive end, then I think he can stay ahead of Jermichael Green. But I can't say that's definitely coming after only seeing 8 minutes. It was encouraging, but we'll see again tonight.
You know, we're in late December. The trade deadline is, what, 5-6 weeks away, roughly. What is Bob Myers' mode, do you think, this time of year? I mean, is he looking for a particular piece? Is he just in listen mode? How would you term, you know, Myers' thoughts as the thing approaches?
Yeah, it's Myers, and it's their, you know, long list of other front office members. I know some of them were out at the G League Showcase in Vegas last week. Well, you know, Myers was in New York with the team. That's when, you know, you hear kind of leaked.
Now I got zapped there.
Oh, there we go. You're back.
Yeah, so, I mean, trade conversations, I think, league-wide are starting to pick up, you know, especially as January gets here. But it's... it feels quiet in the league overall right now, and if I don't expect a big swing from the Warriors. I expect if they do go to the market, it's more, again, like an eighth, ninth man, like an upgrade on a Jermichael Green rotation spot. Maybe they use one of their younger guys, but historically, Bob Myers' front office has been quiet in season. They made the big one a few years ago, the Wiggins for D'Angelo Russell swap, but that was like they were... That season was over by the time they made that. That was a 50-50 year. They really just work around the edges. And to me, I actually look buyout more than trade market, because buyout means you don't have to use any assets, number one. And two, they can offer potential buyout guys minutes, and that appeals to buyout candidates. Usually they're leaving teams and they want to go somewhere they're basically guaranteed to play. And I think the Warriors might have an opening for you know, a ninth man, something like that.
Anthony, great stuff. We really appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right, fellas.
Thanks, Anthony.
Slater joining us here on 95.7 The Game, our 95.7 The Game Warriors Insider. Some good stuff from Slater.
Well, and you know, this time of the year, it's like, you know, you've played that first part of the year. You've kind of seen what you have. Now I wouldn't call this the dog days of the NBA season. This is kind of like now where teams start to plot what they're going to do at the trade deadline. And I'd love to know Bob Myers thinking, you know, how he really feels about his chances going forward.
What do you think of Bob not having a contract? You know, that story broke a couple weeks ago. I think before the Boston game, Woj came out with his report. You know, it's the first ABC showcase game, so you got to have something a little bit on each team. And his nugget on the Warriors was the fact that Bob Myers contract up at the end of this season, and nothing on the table at this point between Bob and the Warriors. What was your kind of read on that?
Well, you know, it is interesting because it's irregular. It's not something that's...
Just want a title.
Yeah, you just want a title, and it makes you think, does Bob want to keep his options open? Does Joe want to hold his feet to the fire? Is there some uncertainty? Is there some division in the ranks between how, you know, about the thoughts on James Wiseman, or, you know, who they should have gone with when they had that high lottery pick? I don't know. Then at the same time, you've got Joe's got his children involved.
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference between Bob Myers and his children? Well, he likes Bob Myers. He loves his children. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, ultimately, you know, does maybe Joe want one of his kids to take over as the general manager? I think that would be a huge mistake. I really do. And I'm not saying that those guys couldn't do the job. It's just that I think the optics are become a problem there if you don't have immediate and instant success.
Yeah, part of me wonders if maybe Bob just might be done on his own terms. Like, I could see a scenario where the run of, you know, becoming a good team and then becoming a championship level team and winning a title and not winning a title, and then everything that surrounded them going and adding Durant to the mix and all the logistics that had to be done to make that happen, and they win a couple of more titles, and then things get edgy, and there's a lot going on behind the scenes with Durant, and is he going to stay, is he going to go? We all knew he was probably going to go, but they had to play out an entire season with the cloak of that hanging over, and then they don't win the title. But not only do they not win the title, but the weight of Durant losing a season of his career on the last night that he plays in that game five, and then Clay losing what would end up being two years, but on, you know, game six, you know, he's out for the next season on the last night of that season. I could see a scenario where Bob maybe felt like, you know what, it's been a hell of a run. It might be time to walk away. But Bob is such a thoughtful guy, such a good human, really, that I could see him almost sticking it out, because it would be a bad look if you're jumping ship at the end of the five finals in a row run, you know, as it looks like things are about to get bleak. So I could almost see Bob, you know what, I want to stick with it to see if we can make some draft picks and if we can make another run back to a title. And then you do it, you know, against a lot of odds, you're able to get back and win a title. He's a big part of, you know, Otto Porter and Bielitsa and Gary Payton II and bringing all these guys in, cobbling together one more run. I could see Bob almost coming to grips with, you know what, I'm going to stick it out when the waters got rough and see what happens, but this is going to be it for me. I don't really think that this is necessarily, and I could be dead wrong, but I don't think this is a scenario of, you know, Joe Lacob maybe not coming to the table or not being happy with Bob. I feel like maybe this is Bob just saying it's time. We'll see, but that's sort of my read on it. And I know there hasn't really been any information. People have been kind of quiet about it overall, but just my theory on that one to this point.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I get the sense, and I don't know this, I have no sources on this, but I get the sense that Joe, in his intensity, can wear you out.
Yeah.
I think he can wear you out.
I think that's part of it.
And I think it's difficult to work for a billionaire owner who has his children involved and who has strong thoughts on everything from, you know, who he wants to extend, who he doesn't want to extend, who he wants to trade for, who he doesn't want to trade for.
The second timeline, you know, wave of, you know, trying to win championships 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, I would not fault Joe Lacob for a second if he was the one who was pushing the two timelines. Why? Because he spent an enormous sum of money to build that opulent palace. And now it's like you can't drive that thing off the cliff in 2 years. You need to have a reason for people to keep coming to games beyond the timeline of Steph and Draymond and Clay, right? So for him to want a second timeline, I think aligns with his business goals.
Sure.
But as far as, you got business goals, you got basketball goals. You know, your basketball goals, do they take precedent? Or do your business goals take precedent? And who knows? I mean, we don't know. These guys could be all on the same page, or they could just be publicly all on the same page, and privately, they could all be on different pages.
No, it's a good thought. He's Larry Kruger. I'm John Dickinson. 888-957-9570. We'll get back into some 49ers conversation. This Brock Purdy deal was jumping off, so we'll get back into that as this segment presented by the Golden State Warriors.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
We'll be right back.
back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
All right, we're rolling along here on a Tuesday. John Dickinson and Larry Kruger, we're in for Damon and Ratto till 6 o'clock. Warriors Live coming up then, 888-957-9570. We'll reopen up the phone lines. Get back into the 49ers conversation on the Xfinity Mobile text line, Larry. You had one that just popped up, and it goes to a statement you made right before Anthony Slater joined us, the 510. A little bit of condescension here. I know you guys both could care less, but but I can't listen to what you're saying anymore when you said they would lose the room.
Could care less or couldn't care less?
He said... What did he say? He said, yeah, could, yeah, exactly. I could care less. He said, I could care less. When they said they would lose the room if they put Jimmy G in, if he was healthy and they have to win a game. Done listening. Good day to you, sir.
I understand why you would have strong feelings, but that's how much better Brock Purdy has been than Jimmy Garoppolo or Trey Lance. And it's pro sports. And in pro sports, the players expect the best players to play. So yeah, guys would say all the right things. Guys would, you know, to the media, they would say, oh yeah, we're happy with whomever. But Shanahan wouldn't do it. Like if Garoppolo were healthy right now, I don't think they would go back to Garoppolo. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I think, and I said this yesterday, I think a scenario that the Niners may welcome, I think they definitely would be one where Garoppolo is healthy enough to be the backup.
Which is why they haven't put him on the IR.
At this point, given the way Purdy has played. And then, I mean, if you had him, and I kind of laid this out just for fun yesterday, could you imagine if Purdy got him to the championship game and then got hurt and Garoppolo was able to come back and ended up winning the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
You'd go from Trey to Jimmy to Brock, back to Jimmy. You win it with three quarterbacks. They all kind of play their own little bit, their little bit part in it. But I think that's the scenario where... Yeah, Purdy would have to really struggle, but I think they'd love to have Jimmy as the backup for the playoff run. And look, Jimmy's probably not going to be 100% at any point between now and the end of the year, but could he get to 80%, which makes him capable of being a backup? I think that may be on the table.
One of the things that came up yesterday, JD, in the Kyle presser was that Shanahan kind of showed his cards. One, I think the 49ers know they made a mistake when they brought Curtis Robinson, a special team linebacker, off of IR, and that took one of their IR returnee designations away from them, right? So now they have to choose between, they brought Kinlaw back, so they have one more guy that they can pull off of IR. And Shanahan basically admitted yesterday in the presser to the press corps that it's going to be Elijah Mitchell. That they're waiting for Mitchell to get healthy, and that it could be Mitchell, it could be Ridgeway, but it sounds like it's going to be Elijah Mitchell. And he didn't confirm it, but he basically made it sound like that's their thinking, and so Mitchell will probably get that last returnee designation. I mean, really, it's amazing that the 49ers have been able to do this. They've had this great run here, largely without Debo and Mitchell. I mean, in the last couple of weeks. So it kind of shows where they're at. I just think Purdy's playing at a really, really high level. And he's the perfect guy to operate Kyle's system. And he makes all the throws. And he can make all the throws. He's ideally fit for a system that's a run-oriented system and that requires you to make efficient throws. And he makes those efficient throws. He's a great distributor. He's very, very accurate, and he's got really, really quiet feet. He's calm in the pocket, and he makes these short intermediate throws just repeatedly, and they're just perfect. He throws strikes all day underneath, and those were the throws that Trey really struggled with. And then you mix in the improv skills and the fact that Purdy's kind of a chain mover. I think the Niners right now, if you're a Niner fan, you got to feel really good. They've got incredible bevy of weapons. Christian McCaffrey has absolutely given them a huge shot in the arm. They've got one quarterback that's playing at a really high level. They got another quarterback in Garoppolo who might be able to serve as his backup down the stretch or in the playoffs. And you got the number one defense that just absolutely wrecked shop on Heinicke and Wentz, pressuring them constantly. So they got a great equation. And I heard, Steiny the guest they had.
Oh yeah.
I forget his name, but, Anyway, I do know him, but I forget his name. Anyway, I was listening to him. He's a big Eagle guy and basically was just saying.
Is it Ross Tucker?
Ross Tucker.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ross Tucker, you know, wanted to say, hey, I got the Niners higher on my power rankings, but then he wanted to say, but I think the Eagles are going to beat them in the playoffs. I don't think the Eagles are going to beat the Niners in the playoffs, and we'll see. That game's going to be in Philly.
I mean, that's
most likely
the ultimate matchup. I feel like the Niners are probably going to beat everybody else that they would face. That's the one, and which goes back even a couple of weeks ago, we had the discussion about it. I think, you know, that atmosphere with the Super Bowl on the line, I think that would be unlike anything that the 49ers have faced at any point. Like, yeah, they had Lambeau in the frigid temperatures and it started snowing in the second half. That's different than, you know, 100,000 at Cowboys Stadium, but 40,000 of them are Niner fans, even in a playoff game. Very different than the pseudo home field advantage they had in the NFC Championship game against the Rams that they lost last year. I think there's something to, hey, the Eagles have been the best team all year, and in that environment at Philly, like that's another level up, I think, based on really anything this team has seen in the last 4 years of them being good in terms of atmosphere and having to win a big game.
Philly's a great running
unbelievable
team.
Test.
They're a great running football team.
Yep.
The Niners have not given up. Forget 100-yard rusher. Forget 90-yard rusher. Forget 80-yard rusher.
70.
Forget 70-yard rusher. I don't think the Niners have given up a 60-yard rusher this year. So, I mean, they're I think, going to be in a pretty good spot. We'll see. And then also, you got the Niner defensive front against a Jalen Hurts with a bum shoulder. And, you know, I saw Travis Gibson fall on that shoulder. And we'll see. You know, we'll see when, one, this idea that Hurts was going to play against Dallas. No. No chance of that. No. And I'd be surprised if he plays this week. I just think when a 270-pound defensive end bounces on your throwing shoulder, you're probably out for a few weeks. So, it's possible, at least, that you get Hurts with not 100% shoulder. But yeah, Philly's a hostile place to play, and the fans will be, you know, raucous and loud. But, you know, Brock Purdy's also just won in Seattle. So, I mean, is it going to be any louder than Seattle?
I think it would be much more hostile at this point. And I was up there for the game in Seattle, and I was up there 3 years ago for the Week 17 game in Seattle as well. It was night and day, the difference from this year to, there were a lot more Niner fans there, still full throat Seahawks fans and 12s and all that running around. But I thought compared to 2019 in that game, it was a different level in 2019. It was far more hostile and loud and just bothersome in 2019 than it was for that Thursday night game. I think the Seahawks fans kind of knew that the jig was up a little bit with that squad.
There was one quote, JD, from Kyle Shanahan. I don't have it in front of me, but he basically said, Brock allows me to call the plays I need to call.
There you go.
And it's like that to me is a loud statement. Basically, he's been coaching around the quarterback for most of his time here with the 49ers. Now he can just play call, play sequence, play design, knowing that he can call what he wants to call in every situation because he's got confidence. That's his way of saying, I've got tremendous confidence in Brock Purdy. Well, so we'll see.
And that goes back to the question that we were discussing earlier, which is, you know, have you seen enough to know that Brock Purdy is the quarterback for 2023, at least going into it, or is there something that can change between now and then? 888-957-9570. I think that answer in quote form from Kyle Shanahan, to me, that tells the story, because, you know, all quarterbacks are going to have bad games, but the ability, and that's the one thing we haven't seen, in fairness, the one thing we really haven't seen from Brock, and, you know, we were joking about earlier, you don't want to necessarily see him have to overcome adversity, but he really hasn't had to overcome any adversity to this point.
I would push back on that.
Okay.
Here's my adversity.
Where?
You're down against the Dolphins. You didn't even know you were going to play. They're beating you in your backyard, and now it's jailbreak. They're sending Van Ginkle and all these guys on all these blitzes.
Sure.
They blitzed the crap out of Brock Purdy, and he handled it and threw some strikes. So I would say there was a lot of pressure in that moment.
But I think that's almost a freebie. Like, you're coming in, you're not.
There's no expectations.
Yeah. So I think that one's a freebie. I think the way the Tampa game, there wasn't a lot of adversity, but I think he handled himself very well in that game as far as the blitzes and all the different things as well. So I think that's an extension of it. You know what I wonder? And this was a thought that I had.
What kind of adversity are you looking for? Two touchdowns, falling into a 14-0 hole?
You set me up perfect because I had it. It popped into my head exactly. And this didn't, I mean, it didn't happen, but it almost did. The Seattle game is the example for me where they're up 7-3. And the game is, you know, you feel like they should be up more. He throws that ball to Diggs that if he catches is probably going the other way for a touchdown. And the Niners had controlled that thing, but the score hadn't at that point dictated they were controlled. You throw a pick six in that environment, even though it was muted compared to 3 years ago, you go down 10-7, and then the joint is really jumping at that point, and you got to lead the 49ers back in a game like that from down with the division on the line. That it's that kind of subtle, hey, you threw that bad pass and had to pay for it, and now how do you bounce back? Because we've seen Jimmy do that and bounce back and be effective. Some quarterbacks, especially young ones, will crumble. I kind of wish, in hindsight, we'd gotten to see how he handled that particular situation.
Here's more adversity. How about the Keanu Neal helmet-to-helmet on the very first play of the game? Smoked Purdy. Probably should have been called called helmet-to-helmet. But, I mean, you take a helmet-to-helmet hit, and then he made three or four great plays on that drive.
They said it woke him up. I mean, yeah. It was kind of the Jimmy response to it. Like, hey, I need to get hit to realize I'm alive.
Well, and then this Washington team, I mean, you had Chase Young and Montez Sweat, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen. I mean, those are four blue chip players, all basically high picks, and they were coming flying after you behind a line that, you know, has struggled at times. So I mean, I hear what you're saying. He hasn't been buried. He's been able to play from ahead for the most part. He hasn't had to play from like a 10-point or 14-point deficit.
And the scary part is, again, you don't want to have to do that in a playoff game. Like, you don't want that. Although, hey, if you do it in a playoff game, then just forget it. Put him in 2020. You get down 10-3 in a playoff game or 14-3 or something like that. You maybe have a bad pick. You come back and win that game. At that point, all bets are off. But I think no 49er fan would want to see that coming in as far as the way things. You don't want that first adversity to be in that first playoff game. But now, looking at the last two games the 49ers have, and the Raiders could be eliminated before kickoff on Sunday. I mean, they're effectively eliminated anyway, but could be officially eliminated before kickoff. I mean, that could be 1-2-3 Cancun. I mean, there was even a report that Derek Carr may not play in the game on Sunday. So it's hard to fathom there's going to be too much adversity in these last 2 weeks is what I'm getting at.
But you still have Max Crosby and Chandler Jones coming off the edges.
That's a good point.
There might not be too many tandems that are more ferocious than that. And then Arizona's got, Golden. And I guess J.J. Watt's retired.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt not going to play? Is he not playing any more games?
I think he's out.
Or is he just out at the end of the year?
Well, I think he's out. Well, hadn't he? What I think he'd been.
Well,
he'd been out, and then he came. Did he come back? I'll be honest with you. I've tuned out the Cardinals.
Cardinals, but I don't remember. I don't remember if I saw JJ or not. But either way, I mean, Cardinals have a defensive front, and they're a divisional opponent. That game will be at Levi's. Yeah, the one thing about Brock though that is interesting is that. And it was the one part for me that I didn't know about until I met the guy. But the guy's got crazy competitive. I mean, you want to go see, the best quarterbacks. It's like, what do they all have in common? Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Russell Wilson. You pick your great quarterback, whatever year. They are all insanely competitive. And that's the one thing about Brock, if you don't know him, is that he's just very, very, very competitive. So you mix in those other traits and then all the experience he had with this incredible competitive gene. And there's a belief in that room in this guy. And it's really interesting because you would think most teams on their third string quarterback, they're done. I mean, you got no shot. Not only are the Niners not done, there's this kind of optimism. There's this energy around this team that the rank and file guy on this roster believes that this third string quarterback can get it done. So that's something you don't see every day.
Well, that's telling. And appreciate the hat tip on the Xfinity mobile text line from the 650. I remember I was listening to this game actually on the radio as I was driving from Levi's to see family in Sacramento. Chandler Jones' elbow injury in the game on Christmas Eve. So he's
done.
He's probably done. Yeah, he got carted off. And I think there was a report today that he's not going to play the last two games.
Well, and come on, the, you know, on paper, the Niners should beat the Raiders and the Cardinals, you know, pretty easily. But it is New Year's Day after spending New Year's Eve in Vegas.
Yes, it is.
So I can't believe the Niners will be rolling through up and down the strip on New Year's Eve. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see who's who partied on New Year's Eve and who got to bed early.
I bet there's a, what, 8 p.m. curfew? What's the curfew look like on New Year's Eve at the team hotel?
Will they even fly in that day? Will they fly in the day of the game and just...
Hey, we'll have a nice party for anybody that wants to, but it'll be right in the hotel and everybody will go to bed at 12:05. Hey, Happy New Year. All right, off to bed. Wake up calls at 7:30.
Exactly. See you at the stadium.
First bus at 10.
Right. Don't be late.
It
is interesting, though, because they're in an interesting spot right now because they are playing this incredible football. They seem to have almost the perfect quarterback for what they want to do, which is, you know, just run the ball, play action pass off of it. I mean, make a lot of short and intermediate throws, be really efficient with your throws, take care of the football. I mean, that's the one thing. When you hear Shanahan talk about Purdy, like when he's asked to evaluate him, he always, almost always starts with, well, he's taking good care of the football.
Well, that's the one thing we haven't seen any other 49er backup be able to do when they've been forced to play, and at times Jimmy can't do it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Jimmy, I thought, was having his best year as a pro, but what is Jimmy known for? He's known for being resilient and tough and being popular in the locker room, but he's also known for these colossal mistakes that he makes. Yep. And this year, he has been able to kind of eradicate that whole, you know, that whole part of his game. You know, he's throwing the ball away, he's moving on to the next play, and not surprisingly, he's played his best football, you know, while taking care of the ball. So, you know, it's really interesting that Jimmy looked like he was on a path to you know, maybe lead this team as far as can go. Now you're on to the next quarterback. It almost appears like Purdy is like could almost like they might be able to get further with Brock than they could with Trey or with Jimmy.
By the way, J.J. Watt did play. Just looked it up. He was playing in that game. He had 6 tackles in the game. No sacks, but he's got 9.5 sacks this year. Did play on Christmas against Tampa. So
he'll be there.
That'll be the final game of his career.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, he'll probably want to go out on top, and he's a big time player. So I mean that, but I got to think the 49ers should be able to run the ball on both the Cardinals and the Raiders. And come away with a victory. But we'll see. We'll see. Because, you know, that's the thing. If they can keep that momentum rolling right into the playoffs, you know, the 49ers are going to be a really, really tough out. I mean, Bosa's the defensive player of the year in the league. He's playing incredibly well. The one concern I guess I have after watching this Washington game is a little bit of their coverage down the field.
Sure. Well, especially when Mooney Ward went out.
And Hufanga had some issues. I mean, that's the one question. Can the 49ers, you know, cover down the field against the pass and not give up big plays? I mean, if Jahan Dotson doesn't drop that
That's a touchdown.
You know, there was separation between him and the defender, and he was going to go into the end zone. So that, I guess, is a little bit of a question. Ultimately, I think the big question is, if Hurts is healthy and the Niners go into Philly, can the Niner D-line put enough pressure on Hurts while he's operating behind one of the NFL's best offensive lines? Can they put enough pressure on Hurts so that Devontae and A.J. Brown don't just toast the Niner corners? Because I think if Hurts has all day to throw, the Niner corners are going to have a hard time standing up to those Eagles receivers.
The other concerning part for me is just his ability to get away. And because we've seen the mobile quarterbacks be problematic for the 49ers, it's the off-schedule stuff. It's can they keep him in the pocket as well? Can they surround him?
Keep him hemmed in.
You want to keep, because to me, it's not like, I think they can get penetration, but it's what do you do with it? And, you know, can you either get him on the ground or prevent him from escaping? Because I think that's where, you know, from Russell Wilson to Justin Fields to Mahomes to, you know, to Josh Allen, you know, going back a couple years ago in that game they had to play in Arizona, that Monday night game, the guys that can escape and then
give
throw it. That has been the kryptonite. Kyler has been a problem for the Niners at times over the when he's been healthy. It's the off schedule stuff. It's the stuff where you think it just goes against the normal 49er pass rush dudes that stand back there and are waiting to get hit against any semblance of a shoddy offensive line, they've just blown those dudes up left and right and forced them into turnovers. But the guys that have the ability to escape get, you know, have hurt them. And I think that's part of the concern. Now, can Hurts, you know, make the throws that he's going to need to make in those moments? I mean, we'll see. It's going to be a big game, obviously, for him and being a little bit banged up. I mean, that remains to be seen. But
and what are the conditions going to be like? Yeah, I mean, it might not be a day to throw. It's Philly in January.
Could be a blizzard, for all we know. Could be cold and clear. I mean, you're right. Could be icy rain. Like, there's a lot of different things. I mean, that game is still a month away at this point. I mean, now with everything getting kicked back to another week in week 18, I mean, that game would be January 29th. So, yeah, just still a full month away.
It's hard to believe how bad the Niner defense looked against Mahomes and company, giving up 40 plus.
Well, they have given up some big plays. I mean, like you said, I mean, and there have been a few big plays that haven't been made by teams, like the one with the Commanders. Like, that's where I've, and I don't know where you've been on this. I mean, it's kind of a silly conversation, and we were having it early, but the Bears beat him on a couple of broken plays. You know, the Niners did a great job against Denver, but they were able to go down at the end of the game and hit some plays in the passing game. Russ made a couple of plays, maybe one of the few plays he made all year with his legs to convert some third downs and move the sticks. But that's where the conversation stopped for me, as far as, hey, this is a great defense, best defense in the NFL. Like, not historically great, though, because there have been too many of those.
Stop with the 85
too many,
Bears.
There's been too many, first play of the game against Miami goes for six. You know, Mahomes torches them. You break down and give up three touchdowns late against the Bears. Like, it's a great defense. It's not a historically great defense, and that's okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's the best defense in the league this year.
And that's all that matters.
But it's not 2000 Ravens, 2002 Bucks. It's really, really good. I'm eager to see, you know, Hufanga, who's, you know, people say, oh, how did Hufanga, you know, wind up on a day three pick? Well, I think you're seeing it. I mean, he's awesome in the box, you know, attacking the mesh point in a cover three where he's lurking up near the line of scrimmage. But if you can make him backpedal and play coverage down the field, that's not his strength. And he can be picked on at times. So is Hufanga going to step up in coverage, you know, when the money's on the table? I think that's a big question. I'm also eager. I'll tell you the other thing I thought was really great to see in this last game. Javon Kinlaw came back. He played 16 snaps. Shanahan said in the presser yesterday that he had no ill effects from those 16 snaps. The knee didn't swell on him. He's feeling great. He had a huge play on the goal line was it third and one or fourth and one where Warner made the tackle, and he basically just absorbed two offensive linemen and freed up Warner to run to the ball carrier and detonate on him. And it's just like, you know what? If Kinlaw can be healthy, he just gives it makes their D-line so much stronger because he can absorb bodies. I mean, he's so strong, and that could really, really help.
All right, he's Larry Krueger. I'm John Dickinson, 888-957-9570. Rich and Fremont, we'll get to you coming back here as we are presented by Fremont Bank. We got 1 hour to go. Presented by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.